This recording was originally a live conversation which took place at Startup Days 2022.
You're too small to actually do an IPO, but you're also too big to easily get funding from somewhere. So there's that middle step that I find is extremely hard right now to navigate for companies and to find funding and all that.
Welcome to the Swisspreneur Show, a podcast about startup stories and learnings from experienced entrepreneurs. Here's your host, Sylvan.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us here today. We're talking about how to go from startup to IPO. And it's my pleasure to introduce today's guest, Jan. You're the CEO at A Small World, where you basically shape the next community of lifestyle and travel. And Fabian, you are a senior relationship manager at Six with a focus on IPOs. So a very competent panel today from the stock market exchange perspective, but also from the entrepreneur's perspective. Jan, you actually worked in consulting for 10 years before you then started A Small World. My question is, when you started the company back in 2016, was it always your goal to do a direct listing and actually become a public company?
No. So we had a bit of an exchange about that earlier. It's interesting also the way we discussed the questions. It's for some people it seems like an IPO is the ultimate goal in sort of the lifestyle or life stages of a company, but it's a step right on the way to one part ends and another starts. And in that sense, we collectively actually decided as a board to do that step. I actually wasn't always in favor of it, to be very transparent, okay. Because it has some challenges that come with it as well. Mm-hmm. And but it's definitely interesting to go through it. So it's mm-hmm. It's an interesting experience to have lived through it. It's also you know, and we'll get to that. How did the life change for the company? What were the benefits? And I just have to say, it's also that it's clear for everyone. We didn't do an IPO as a small world. We did a direct listing, which is a difference. We didn't offer stock for sale at this stage. We just listed our shares, and I think it's just a nuance that I want to make sure everybody's aware of.
An important difference.
Yes,
Fabian, you've been working at the Swiss Stock Exchange for 5 years. How has the IPO game basically evolved over your time being there?
Well, I have to say, in the past 5 years, there were not many changes in terms of the requirements or the IPO process as such. It always depends, right? Is there a lot of external factors that play a role on the IPO activity? Currently, rather difficult. The IPO window is currently not open, but the past years have been good. In Switzerland, we see like an average 5 to 7 IPOs taking place on our exchange. We had an outlier in 2018 with 12 companies that went public, whereas 7 were IPOs and 5 listings, direct mm-hmm. listings. Then Corona was, of course, a showstopper. IPO activity came to a standstill. And then in Switzerland, this IPO activity, there wasn't such a rapid rebound as in other countries. And so we have kind of a backlog. And there's, as I said, 5 to 7 companies choosing the route of an IPO in Switzerland. Yeah.
So now let's focus on actually, you know, going public, whether it's direct listing or an IPO. I want to start with you because what you just said at the beginning, Jan, made me really curious. You were not always in favor of doing a direct listing. So how did that change?
Well, you have to have a good reason to list your company, right? So mostly the reasons are you need more capital that you can't raise as a private company and you want to grow. You may have pressure from certain shareholders who would like to, you know, sell their stake in the company and are looking for a way to do that. Those are usually the reasons. And if you want capital, usually the IPO is the way to go because mm-hmm. you're raising capital for the company for your growth. If you want to divest or like have shareholders that want to get out through that road of public listing, a direct listing is also a feasible way. For us, it was actually other reasons. It was we had a potential transaction just about a year and a half before we did the listing, where we had long conversations with a company that we really wanted to buy and integrate into a small world to grow. And we just had endless debates about what the structure is. And it was also a private company. And they, in the end, then went with a company that was publicly traded, because the determination of how much the share swap was worth was easier. They could divest it afterwards if they wanted to. It just fell to them as a more transparent and easier partnership than to go with us. And then we decided, okay, we don't want to be in that situation again, and be able to have a transparent pricing mechanism for our company's value and so per share, and also to be able to use our shares as a currency for future acquisitions in case you do it as usually cash and shares. And also the third reason is to have longer term access to a different group of investors for growth and additional capital. So those were really the reasons for us. And they all, well, to jump ahead, they all worked out, right? So fast forward, we've done two acquisitions actually since we've been listed. And we've also just recently did a smaller stake in another company. And all these things would not have been possible, I think, if you would have been a private company. So in that sense, for us, It was successful in the sense that we were able to use us being public as a tool to acquire and to grow the company. So that was why we did it, and like the very short answer of whether it was working for us or not.
It gives you more strategic options to play in the end.
It does, right? But it comes, and here's the downside, right? So it comes with a couple of challenges. So first of all, everything becomes very transparent, of course. You have to report at least twice a year, and very thoroughly, right? So that you have to really like put your cards on the table of how the company is doing. You have to spend a lot of money on it that you otherwise wouldn't have to spend. I mean, the listing, and we did a direct listing. We've estimated that it cost us roughly about 700,000 Swiss francs to do it. And if you want to do an IPO, it can be a lot more than that, because I mean, the main difference is that if you do an IPO, you also have to pay a bank, which we didn't have to do in our case. And the banks, if it's a smaller IPO, they probably charge somewhere in the area of 5% of the capital that you will raise. And so that can become expensive very quickly. Yeah. And then there's also, so there's the transparency aspect, there's the reporting aspect. Now that the being listed cost is also real. So it's somewhere, I would say, around 200,000 Swiss francs per year, I would estimate, and it fluctuates a little bit depending on how much you count the banks that support you for IR activity, and how much legal work you have, which can also be substantial, because it feels like there are a little bit of a constant requests from the regulators to like to comment on things and comment on activity, and that all needs to be prepared by lawyers, and it's not something that I can do, or I wouldn't do it in the correct form. So you have to anywhere between 20,000 100,000 Swiss francs in terms of legal cost per year. Like so saying 200,000 is probably like the lower end, probably goes to 250, 300 per year if you count banks and lawyers as well.
It's not a cheap ride, that's for sure. I also want to talk about the timing, Fabian, from your perspective, with your experience. When is the right timing to actually pursue an IPO or a direct listing?
Well, that is actually very individual, right? It also depends also on the sector you're in, on the sector dynamics. And then there's the IPO window that has to be open, because the timing is extremely important. You have to be, of course, you have to be prepared. I mean, the pre-IPO phase is extremely important, but when the IPO window is open, right, I think you should seize your opportunity and go for it. But of course, there are the basic requirements that need to be met in order to be able to list your company on our exchange. when is the right timing? This is really, really difficult to say. Right. Of course, you need to have a certain maturity. You also need to pay all these costs, right? But funny, the past 2 days, we had our IPO Academy, where we invited the CEO from, former CEO and founder of Zur Rose Apotheke. Yeah. And they went public on our exchange with an IPO in 2017. And actually, this question was also asked. And he said, or the question was asked, would you do an IPO again? And when would you have done it earlier, or whatever? And then he said, absolutely, I would have gone earlier if I had the, now in retrospect, because that would have given me the opportunity to definitely grow faster, to follow their very aggressive expansion strategy that I had, that I still have. They did a lot of capital raises after their IPO. So this access to continuous public capital was definitely something that helped them go there where they are today, and they would have be able to outpace their competitors much earlier if they would have gone public earlier. So it really depends, right? So it's also then the equity story that needs to be there, and then in the end, the bank which accompanies you will tell you then if your equity story will meet investors' interest, right? They do that in a so-called pilot fishing phase very early in the process. And if they see, yes, this is a good story and we have investors' interest in this story, then they will prepare you. They will make you ready. And then when the window opens, you can go there.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Jan, maybe from the business perspective, where you're looking at a certain revenue or valuation threshold where you said we need to get there before we actually start the whole direct listing process.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand. So we're talking about listing in Switzerland now, right? To be very clear, right. Because different markets and different exchanges have different rules for and different requirements. In Switzerland, we have one standard for all companies that are being listed. So we as a small world, as a very small micro cap or whatever you want to call it, have the same regulations as a UBS and a Credit Suisse. We're probably a bit better managed than Credit Suisse, I would say, at least. So the minimum is you have to have, and Fabian, you have to correct me here. I think you have to have 2.5 million in net equity. That's sort of what you have to have as a company, as a real minimum. You have to have a free float of at least 20%, and the free float has to be at least 25 million Swiss francs in market cap. Mm. Is that still
No, the equity requirement has been adapted to,
okay.
Exactly.
Good.
It's 25 million actually for the main market today.
Okay, so but the free float alone, right? Or the whole company?
The equity capital, actually.
Okay, so it's okay, got it. Yeah. So it's a bit lower. So you have to reach that. And then what I'm saying, so that's the minimum. Then you have, as I said, as a company, you probably have to go through the cost benefit of is it worth what we're getting? Mm-hmm. And then at the same time, I think you have to, as I say, you have to have a reason for it. Is it because you're going to raise capital? Is it because you have shareholders want to exit, and is it worth it? And then what I would say, what is tricky is even if you meet the requirements and you then public, we are in this space now where we're listed, but there's still a lot of investors out there that cannot invest in our company. Which is frustrating for us as a management, because many funds have minimum requirements of the company has to have a certain market cap. Many of them have a minimum requirement of 100 million. They have minimum requirements in terms of they cannot invest more than one day of trading volume or stuff like that, which very quickly limits the institutional investors that actually can invest in your company. So what I'm saying is, like, if you think you're out and you're listed and now you're big leagues and now the big funds are going to put money into your company, it doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. And you have to be aware of that, right? So I'm saying there's a you have to have a strategy and you have to have a realistic expectation of what's going to happen. So today, for us, we still have many private investors. We have small funds and family offices that invest, but we do not have big institutional investors because they just cannot invest in us because we're still, even at overlisted, we're too small a company. And then you mentioned the window, right? Which I think is more timing and market environment, if I understand you correctly. So obviously you want to list in an environment where that's friendly to the equity market. And that's also probably why right now a couple of people are reconsidering whether it's the right time, because you want to make sure it's going well and it keeps growing after the IPO. So that's probably the external factors that you want to consider. And so it's really a mix of factors that should influence your decision on whether you want to do that or not.
And another factor, Fabian, is where you actually want to do the listing, right? You could do it here in Switzerland with SIX, but you could also go international, for example, list at NASDAQ, for example. What are the key criteria there to make the right decision where you actually want to list your company?
Well, there are many factors that play a role, right? So there are, let's say, many companies, or NASDAQ, they have like a certain traction to companies because of the valuation you might get at the IPO, right? But I think there are other factors that play also a very important role. I think the costs, right? So if you go public in Switzerland, you mentioned the costs, but compared to a listing in the US, I mean, they're considerably lower in Switzerland. Then also the risks. For instance, if you go to the US, right, you find your company in a US legal and tax environment, and for this you need legal and tax advisors. You also need a US investment bank that accompanies you there. Costs also something, and you expose your company to just additional requirements, complexity, risk, costs, and also the time. A listing on the Swiss Stock Exchange, when you file the listing prospectus and the listing application within four weeks, actually, you get the approval from the exchange. And this is when you have the IPO window, also a help to de-risk your IPO project. Whereas in the US, you have to file SEC with the SEC, you have IRS, you have many requirements that make very, very complex and a lengthy process. And furthermore, during the risks, right? The US securities litigation is a really, really big thing there. And it's absolutely unavoidable that you do there a so-called D&O insurance liability insurance due to the ever-increasing securities litigation there, and they cost easily $1 million per year, right? So you really have to also take that into consideration and only go for the fact where you can get the highest valuation at the IPO, but also where you can actually create long-term sustainable shareholder value while meeting all the requirements that are imposed on you by investors and by the regulator as a publicly listed company. And there, I think Switzerland is, compared to other exchanges, to other jurisdictions, quite lean, quite efficient. Yeah.
What were your thoughts when you made that decision? Did you also look at other markets abroad instead of just the Swiss market?
We did, but we actually, for three reasons, actually made the decisions to do it in Switzerland. One, which is probably the most important one, we're a Swiss company and we actually wanted to be listed in Switzerland if it was feasible. And so it was a commitment to the market also, because we believe that, because we've regulated all in the same way, as we said, a UBS or a Credit Suisse, it's also a seal of approval, right? And a seal of credibility, because you have to be you have to be up to the standard. And then secondly, it's actually very, I can support that point. It's even though we don't have a smaller segment or like some other markets have, where you have like for mid-sized companies, it's actually surprisingly efficient to do it with SIX.
You do actually now have one.
You do have one. Yeah. Okay, good. Like, okay, good for the next guys to do that. It's surprisingly efficient to do it in Switzerland. And at the time when we did it, we also had the opportunity to actually be listed in other markets in Europe. So we had actually a secondary listening, or at least you could trade us in the German market in euro. And for us, that was then a combination between Switzerland and the European market, which was sort of an advantage for us as well. So we didn't have to go to a European market to tap into euro-based investors. Unfortunately, over the last few years, that has become a political issue, and that was actually completely stopped, that you can trade Swiss companies abroad, which for us was actually quite a loss, to be honest. I mean, we had quite a few investors outside of Switzerland in euro, the euro funds or other stuff. And so we missed that aspect a little bit. We'd be happy if it would come back. But so that was sort of our thinking of when we did it with SIX in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned, Fabian, there is an exciting new project coming up or that has been launched, a stock market exclusively for SMEs, basically. Please talk a bit more about that, because that sounds interesting also for many startups as a potential way to go public.
Yeah, thank you for the hint.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. No, we launched this new segment. It's called Sparks. I just mentioned before the Sparks IPO Academy is the ancillary services from this new segment, where we want to educate with the Sparks IPO Academy potential IPO candidates, high potential IPO candidates in Switzerland, for this new segment called Sparks, where we want to facilitate the access to the public capital markets for younger, fast-growing, capital-seeking companies, and allow more SMEs also to go public and enjoy the benefits that they get here, that can benefit from as a publicly listed company. And there we have slightly lower requirements compared to the main market in terms of equity capital. It's 12 million, whereas 8 million have to come or stem out of a capital increase at the IPO. So 12 million and 8 has to stem out of the capital increase. So you have to issue primary shares. So it's an IPO. We want to attract companies that use the IPO to finance their growth. It also always goes down as well with the equity story then, of course. Track record 2 years. And you need to do your accounting or financial statements according to a recognized accounting standard by the Swiss Stock Exchange, which is Swiss GAAP FER, IFRS. So
that's a lot of obligation. That's a lot of work usually.
Exactly, absolutely. This is a requirement. And then in terms of free float, right, liquidity is definitely a challenge there. So we try to face that with a trading window, which is only open in the afternoon. That starts at 3, which is aligned with the opening in the US, which lasts until 20 past 5, aligned to the main market opening, then closing auction, etc. We believe that through this, we have like a pooling of liquidity, helps price formation, etc. And the minimum requirements in terms of free float, absolute, is 15 million, and in percentage, it's 15%. So there we aim for companies with market capitalizations from 100 million to 500 million. If it's above, then you can also go directly to the main market. But we want to create a market here in Switzerland, as other countries do have that as well, where they can list and be listed among peers and enjoy from more visibility as well when you're listed and with peers and not with Novartis and Roche maybe in the same market, right? We launched various initiatives around it that should support also their visibility with research coverage, liquidity provisioning, etc. So maybe we can have a chat later on.
Yeah, I think it will be super helpful, because what my experience was is that in Switzerland, when you look at the life stages of the companies, at a very early stage, you put your own money into a business. You have like friends and family investing, like the usual, right? And then the next stage is already a bit tricky. Like, where do you get the next round from? Like, there's not too many venture capital companies, but there are some now, and you get a little bit of help. But then you get to that stage where you're too small to actually do an IPO, but you're also too big to easily get funding from somewhere. So there's that middle step that I find is extremely hard right now to navigate for companies and to find funding and all that. and having sort of that lower the bar for like a, for companies to be public on a lower scale, let's put it like that, will really help, because it will also build the support structure around it, which is a, the listing is one thing and having the market, but obviously it comes with, you need companies that then also put money into it, and you need the help and support. So I think it will be very good for Switzerland as a marketplace or as a listing ground for new companies or smaller scale. Mm-hmm. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's exactly what you said. You want to build this bridge, right? So we saw in the past years, I mean, VC venture capital report over $3 billion, right?
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, this helped companies grow and come to a point where a potential IPO could be the next step in their development, right? And in Switzerland, so far they didn't have this opportunity, and now with this, we want to build this bridge, and so that they can use Sparks as a springboard with the direct and continuous access to growth capital, which you can raise then capital, growth capital, much more efficiently as in these private rounds, right? So you can actually raise up to 20% of your outstanding share capital without having to list a prospectus every year. So that's quite a sum. So if you're really capital seeking, this can help you bring your company to the next level and use Sparks maybe as a springboard then to once make it into the main market, or then with a dual listing in the US or whatever. But right. Yeah, so this is the aim. But it's there. We need an ecosystem right around it, a vibrant ecosystem that helps. We need the banks that support these transactions. We're working on it. Yeah, and we actually already had the first listing in February on the segment. A company called X Life Sciences went public with a market cap of 250 million. And
it's working.
It started, but there's still a way to go, yeah.
Jan, if you look back at your journey to do the direct listing, where did you make some mistakes, or what things would you do differently today? Because I think it's always great to learn from people who've actually walked the talk to not repeat the same mistakes.
Yeah, I think the it's a bit what I said earlier, which is don't think when you're listed you're now big leagues, right? Mm-hmm. So that doesn't work like that. The world hasn't been waiting for you to be listed, and then they're all going to throw money at you. It doesn't work like that. You still need a sound business and need to build it. So in that sense, I think we. Not that it was a mistake, but I think you have to be more aware of like what it means for the company and what the world looks after a listing, what it looks like after a listing. Also, the transparency and everything that comes with it is sometimes to a certain point a bit uncomfortable. And the regulatory aspect is also tight, right? So it's like you're expected to have all these procedures performed to up to standard of like companies that are way bigger and have bigger legal teams and everything. So it comes with responsibility and certain pressure. So be aware of that and be able to handle that. On the other hand, I think it's great to build credibility as well. I mean, and like I said, we've done two capital increases since. So we haven't done a capital increase, or haven't done the IPO, so we haven't done the capital increase with the listing, but we've done mm-hmm. two since then. Two acquisitions. We just bought like 10% of Global Hotel Alliance, the world's biggest loyalty program of independent hotels. And that was financed through a loan. So, and we partner with Miles & More, Etihad, Jumeirah. I mean, all like really big league names, where I think they wouldn't have done that with us if they wouldn't have known that we're a serious company and we're listed and like it's like all properly set up, right? So in that sense, it really helped. So it's just you have to see whether it will help you or not in the end.
You probably only find that out in the end, but you can do your calculations, right?
Yeah, but you kind of can anticipate in which areas and hope my story illustrate a little bit where it helped us and what mm-hmm. the challenges are. And so if you're thinking about your own company and whether you want to do that, is like, can you profit from the same positive aspects with your company? If yes, then it's probably would be a good step. And then if you can see, oh, the cost is too much, the pressure that comes with it and all of that is potentially negative, and you don't have a need for cash right now, let's make that also very explicit, then stay private, and it's a more relaxed life. It's an easier life if you grow, and if you're self-funding, just go down that path, and like, don't rush it. You can always do it at a later stage if you really need it, right?
One thing I would also like to do with both of you is to sort of compare the direct listing process and the IPO process. So maybe we can pick from your experience, Jan, and you can also then make sort of highlight the differences between going IPO and going direct listing. So where did you start? What was the first thing that you did when you actually said, hey, we want to go and do a direct listing with our company?
Yeah, well, I mean, we first looked at the regulations from SIX and said, what do we actually have to do in order to get there, right? So is it even feasible to do it? And that's the minimum requirement, minimum investor size, the equity size and all that. And I said, okay, well, that actually works. And so what else do we need to do? You need, as we say, you need to have the, it either needs to be IFRS accounting or Swiss GAAP fair. Which we had to change, right? So it's actually, and it's quite a bit of work because you have to do it like 3 years back. That means you have to put your accountants to work to restate your financials for the last 3 years, which actually is a ton of work. You have to have it audited, right? So then you have to go to your auditors and they have to go through it all. So I think that's probably one of the biggest chunks of work if you're not already on one of those accounting standards. You have to have legal support to make sure that your legal structure is set up properly. You have to write a prospectus, a listing prospectus, which is also needs also to be checked by the lawyers and by the accountants. So there's all of that is quite serious project management work as well, right? And then on the optional part, I would say you probably need a PR team as well that like gives you a bit of a positive PR. You need potentially an IR team if you want to speak to investors before to generate some interest. And potentially you do it with banks as well to do a roadshow. Even if you're not using the banks as underwriters, it helps to have them being supportive and sort of being invested in either mentally or financially. And all of these things are optional, the last three, but they help as well. And so then you go through all of that and then you have a timeline and you work with the exchange as well, right? To say like, okay, what do you have ready? Is it handed in properly? By when could we do it? When do you announce it? So that's pretty much the process. And I think it took us about 6-7 months, I would say, roughly, to pull it off.
That's actually quite fast, no?
Yeah. But I mean, it's a lot of work during
the
7 months. And you're distracted, right? Because you're doing less, you focus less on the business. So it's also a distraction. And it's a cost, right? As I said, probably somewhere between 600,000 and 700,000. Mm. You have to make sure you have for that process. And that's the direct listing, not the IPO, right, which is more expensive.
So I guess the three points that he mentioned is optional. These are the things, you know, with the banks where you need to actually directly place your offering. That's what's not optional if you do the IPO.
That's correct, yeah. I mean, I think the process is actually more or less the same. You need a prospectus. The prospectus is with a direct listing, just a bit smaller because you don't have the offering there. It's less risky for the banks, of course. So, but you need the banks, right, with an IPO. So it's important to, and that's absolutely a success factor, right, to choose the right partners. So you need a lead manager and it's a bank, right? And then you need a consortium of banks. And this is what you didn't need, but with what you need today, because also today there was a change in the regulations. Today, also for a direct listing, you need to have your recognized representative. That's the third party that talks to the exchange, needs to have a license as a bank or a banking status or a status as a securities trading firm. So it needs to be a bank today as well for the direct listing. This has changed, but then the process, yeah, as you said, actually, this is quite similar from an IPO perspective and the direct listing perspective. Yeah. Also then after the listing, all this, the same requirements apply for all.
So now, Jan, after the direct listing, what else is left there to do, you know? Company's public. What are the next goals?
Well, the goals actually haven't changed. That's what I'm saying. It's there's no point in glorifying the going public or an IPO as part of the company. I mean, in the end, if you run a company, you want to have a business that grows and that is successful, and the IPO is, you know, a milestone somewhere on that journey. And look, when we listed in 2018, we had 8.8 million in revenue. We had a loss of 2.4 million in that year, measured by our EBITDA. So it wasn't a great business at that stage, right? And now last year we had 15.6 million. So it's close to being double that size in terms of revenue. And we have a profit of 2.4 million, right? So it's... what I'm saying is that's not, I wouldn't say that's just because of the listing, right? But it's a lot of hard work that goes into shaping and building the company. And so there is no, the IPO or so is not a shortcut or a goal in itself to be a successful company, but it's a tool, right, on the journey to build a successful company. And I think that's, for me, a key thing to understand, right? Because, yeah, I think for many founders or so on, like the IPO is, like, feels like the ultimate goal, but it really isn't, because your company is still going to be around afterwards, unless you want to cash out and close the company and do something else, right? Then yes, but if you're invested in your company and you want to keep building it, it's just a milestone, but you will still continue running the company and building it.
It's a bit like fundraising, right? You can celebrate the round, but then the work really starts.
Yes.
You wanted to add something, Fabian?
Yeah, I think it's great what you just said. I mean, this is also a mindset change that we need here a bit in Switzerland. Companies here tend to go public later, and in other countries, that's absolutely not the case. Mm-hmm. In the Nordics, you see so many IPO transactions taking place for young companies. They use the public markets to grow. And here in Switzerland, the IPO is for many companies still so far away, like the ultimate cherry on the pie, then.
But you also don't really think that it's possible to do it as a Swiss company.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So we need to change this mindset. We need ambassadors like you. This is great, because I think the advantages they outweigh. Of course, you have all these requirements you have to meet as a public company in terms of reporting, etc. But this also increases your transparency and boosts your efficiency as a company.
100%
also, yeah. In private, as a private company, then, I mean, you, in an unstructured way, you receive a request from investors, right? As a listed company, you have the equal treatment, right? You have to treat every shareholder the same way, and you have to be careful with the information policy, etc. So you inform the market twice a year with an unaudited financial statement and an audited financial statement, and in between, if someone asks you, you can't give this information because you cannot give him it has to be equal treatment, right? And this also boosts efficiency, because when we had talks with private companies, they told us these requirements, we it's not a showstopper for us, because it probably helps us, because nowadays we receive so many unstructured questions from investors that we have to handle, and this is really inefficient, right?
Taken care of. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I have to say the transparency requirements and the reporting requirements, I'm really happy about those. So from a management point of view, because it kind of keeps us focused on doing it. It's something that you would easily sort of deprioritize if you're a private company and say, there's other stuff that's more important. As a public company, you can't. And so the way we set up our finance procedure since the listing, the way we report, the way we keep everything updated, because we have to, really helps to run the company better and communicate better. And I think in the end, we are more successful as a company because we are doing that. And so it's not just a burden. Yeah, it is a burden because you have to do it, but it's also helpful that you do it, I would say. So just to add that aspect as well.
So I have one final question for you. What are some motivational words that you would give to Swiss startups to really pursue the IPO path and make it happen, that, you know, in 3, 4, 5 years from now, we have 20 Swiss startup IPOs per year?
Become the next Swiss success story, become a role model, become the next local hero, and get rich.
You ask me as well.
Of course, it's for both of you.
Okay, well, I mean, you heard me already. I had said it a few times. I have a bit more, always a bit more cautious, right? Like I said, I think you have to be very clear of like why you're doing it. But then on the positive, it's actually, it's doable. I think that's an important aspect. It's not like something that is far, far away. You can actually do it if you want to do it. And if you have a reason for it, and you can pull it off, right? And then it's good to be part of the next or in that in the limelight, and it helps with partners. Like I said, it helped us grow. It helped us with credibility and transparency. So do it if you think it will help your business, and then take 6 months, put in some work, and then you're a public company.
Amazing. Are there any questions from the audience? Oh, yeah. First one here on the right.
Thank you very much for sharing your very, very exciting, I think, story. Question to Jan. You mentioned at the beginning that one of the reasons is to raise more capital. And I think today there is, in general, excess capital in the private market. So no need sometimes to go public. And you mentioned pressure from shareholder to sell or to divest, which as an investor, potentially I would look at it more as a red flag. You mentioned as well on 2018, you had around 8 million revenue, 2 million loss. What was the IPO price?
9.75, but there was no IPO price. It's an indicative price. Yeah.
Okay, and today, how do you compare the performance of the stock today compared to 2018?
It's at 250 right now. It's a lot lower.
Okay. So the reason I'm asking this question, because I think you said you still need to build the business. And sometimes it could be very, very challenging as a CEO, as a business builder. Your focus should be on the business, and it's still a young company. It's a great business model. Having the pressure from the public market, from regulation, from pressure, from banks. And I think you mentioned banks, that's great to see with their client. I think banks, they look at it more as a product and they will sell it and then they will forget. So it's still in a private mood. Why would you go public other than you need more capital? Because I think I would like to understand the thought process. And then the question you ask, if you want to do something differently, would you say, I should not have listed my company? Thank you.
Yeah, I think I mentioned it earlier. What are the benefits, right? So, I disagree with you on the point that in the private markets there is excess money and you can easily access it. So, you have money, but it doesn't mean that it always flows to like smaller companies. So for us, it was to have our value of the company clearly defined as by a share price, and to use our shares as a currency to do other acquisitions. So because then you often do share and cash based transactions, and it helps. And we lost one acquisition before that because it was tricky as a private market. So that was the first reason. Secondly, it helps with credibility with partners, because as we said, you're held to the same standard as I'm now not using the banks, I'm not using Roche and Novartis or like other big companies. So you have more credibility if you're regulated by the Swiss Stock Exchange, and it's trustworthy. And that helped us with getting partnerships with Miles & More, Etihad, like Emirates, Jumeirah, like all big names that otherwise probably would not have partnered with us. So helped us build the business. And it has a certain PR effect as well that comes with it. And it allows existing investors and potential people that are interested in it to buy and sell. So that's for us the positives, right? And then on the negatives, like I said, it comes with a certain cost, and it has transparency requirements that can be uncomfortable, don't have to be. Like, I don't feel the pressure, to be honest. I mean, I feel sometimes it's the share price is sometimes seen as the ultimate determinant of whether it was successful or not. That's the only thing that I think is a bit tricky, because as a small company can be go up and down. I mean, we went from an indicative price of roughly 10 Swiss francs to 24, then to 1.5, and now we're somewhere around 3. So it can be a bit of a roller coaster. So you have to be able to live with that. And so that's my thought process. But is it a huge distraction, to your point, of like in the process of building the company? I wouldn't say so, because I mean, right now with the requirements, what is it? It's transparency, and the transparency is mainly financial and good business practice, in the sense that you communicate in terms of ad hoc requirements and all that if something important happens. The transparency, the financial transparency, helps you to stay on top of your financials. So actually, I don't think it's a burden. It's actually good to be on top of it all the time. The ad hoc requirements, we want to communicate what we're doing anyway. So I don't think it's a massive issue, although it cost me a bit of time to like prepare press releases and all that. And the investor relations part is actually very helpful also to get in touch and build a network in sort of the financial community. And you actually get sometimes even business things like, oh, I'm talking to this company as well. They're doing something similar. So I connect you guys. So I don't really see it as a distraction for me in that sense. The listing process itself, the 6 months, they definitely are. Once you're there, I don't think it's massive issue. It's actually helpful, I would say. And then it's just like, if I say the 200 to 250, 300,000 that it costs like in per year, you just have to be sort of sure that it's worth it, right, to do that.
Maybe in the process, right, what it could also be helpful is to nominate like an internal project manager within the company that really focuses on the IPO project, because it absorbs really a lot of resources from the management, and you still need to do a daily business, right? So maybe why not nominate someone that really just takes care of this project?
Yeah, I would strongly recommend that. Yes.
Yeah.
So I do want to be respectful of your time. We're going to stop the recording here, but we're still around for questions afterwards. Jan, Fabian, thank you so much for taking us behind the scenes of the IPO journey, or the get public journey. All the best and lots of success. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, you can support us by rating our show on Apple Podcasts. This way, we can reach an ever-growing number of aspiring entrepreneurs.